Hey everyone, it's your host Taylor. Downtime is taking a break to work on a secret project. It's so secret, we don't even know what it's called yet. While we're away, please enjoy a replay of some of our team's favorite episodes. This week's replay is Elena's conversation with Becky and Kim from CPL's Tech Services Department. Enjoy.
Lovely, thank Marty. You.
Break a leg.
Woo! Woo-hoo. Hello and welcome to another episode of Downtime with Cranston Public Library. This is a podcast for cool people who love libraries, where we talk about what we've been reading, what we've been watching, and what we've been loving. Taylor is away this week. I'm your guest host, Elena. I'm a youth services librarian at the Central Library, and my pronouns are she, her.
And my name is Becky, and I work with acquisitions at the Cranston Public Library, and my pronouns are she, her.
I'm Kim, and I am a cataloger at the Cranston Public Library.
A little bit later in the show, we'll talk to Kim and Becky about working in tech services. But before we get to that, let's start out, as we always do, with what have you been reading? Whatever you're enjoying, talk to us about it.
I can't say that I am reading anything right now, but I do enjoy watching my usual cartoons.
Like what?
Of Peppa Pig and Paw Patrol. And I'll attribute that to my nephew.
Love that. I've been putting on overnight for my bunny. She likes to watch TV. So I want her to watch the classics that are classics in my book. So overnight, I put on Roly Poly Oly and JoJo Circus. What else have I been putting on? Oh, like Hometown Heroes. That was like a little bit older for me, but still.
Not familiar with that one.
Every episode highlights a different career and why, like, public service workers are heroes, which is pretty cool. Oh. And they learn about them and, like, you know, here's how we could do better as, like, younger community helpers. Yeah, it's cute. It's catchy. It is a job. It's for Luna, my bunny. Like, she's not going to go out there and, like, save a cat, but it's fine. It keeps her occupied overnight. I think TV shows are emotionally taxing, and I try not to get invested. But that's why I
watch. Well, that's it. That you get so emotionally into it, depending on what you're watching. If, like, you just worked all day and you don't want the true crime and not be able to sleep at night, you want something really light. Mm-hmm. Heartstoppers for you.
Oh, my gosh. I'm going to lose my mind when the new season comes out. I think in August, like August 11th.
August. Yeah. And the graphics in Heartstopper were just so cute. Like, the leaves and the flowers.
Yeah,
like,
they come straight from the graphic novel.
I just want season two in 1923.
I still have to start that.
I'm stuck in the past. I'm stuck.
I read. In love with it. It is
I am stuck
good,
in the past.
Dana,
I sit there
it.
At night. I mean, well, I shouldn't say I sit there at night, but I mean, like, my favorite thing is to watch a Western. I can't help it.
Mm. Fair enough, because, you know, Yellowstone was great, but
Yellowstone is amazing.
And, like, what,
1883? 1883,
1923. Yep, all great, do not get me wrong, but if you need something light and,
but
like,
I'm talking about John Wayne, Henry Fonda, you know, I'm talking
classics.
About the classic Westerns.
Yeah.
We got to think of
Stewart.
Something.
Huh?
We got to think of something for you to watch.
Although, don't get me wrong. I mean, I loved Bridgerton. I loved Queen Charlotte. Mm. I thought Queen Charlotte was actually better than Bridgerton, only because it's very historical for me.
Mm, okay.
You know,
okay.
It kind of put, like, at least a personal, not personal for me, but I mean a personal note on the two characters, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it was, I thought I liked it.
You made a face. Did you like Queen Charlotte?
I didn't watch it. I watched the first season of Bridgerton, and it was good, but is it something I could get sucked into and need to watch when it comes back out? Like, you know, Schitt's Creek? Does that get edited because that's the actual title, Dave? Let me know. Or, I don't know. Even You, like, when I watched You, I needed to know what was going to happen in the next season. I still haven't watched the newest season because I'm like, I've got so many shows to watch and, like, I don't want it to be over and then I need more because, you know, there's going to be another one. There always is.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. I couldn't get into Bridgerton. I like timepiece shows, so it's not like anything about that. I don't know.
It's too much work for me to start.
So many good things to watch.
Based off of books. Yeah, but like I'm definitely a read the book and then watch the show or movie type of gal. Most of the time, not all the time. I can't keep up with it all.
Mm-hmm.
It's too much. What about you, Kim?
I'm listening to Spare by Prince Harry.
Ooh.
So far, good. There's a few like moments where it's like, damn. Mm. I mean, but then again, we don't live those lives, so I don't know whether to believe it or not. And, you know, is it hearsay? Is it just him talking? There's nothing to really judge it by or go by, but it's really to listen to because you can kind of like give a wholehearted sense of happening to him. But I mean, it is, I have to say, it's a good book.
Yeah, I read a little excerpt from that when it came in, and it kind of gave me some flashbacks to whole, like, you know, Elton John did the song tribute and things like that. It was kind of sad. Like you said.
What is it? There's always three sides to every story, yours, mine, the truth.
That's good. I only became conscious, like in my brain, conscious of the royal family when Prince William got married. And I was like, what? They still exist out there? Yeah. I had no idea. I was like, I don't care. And like now as an adult, I'm Team Diana just because I got to be.
I truly do not understand why that one particular royal family is in such the spotlight. It's like, okay, why isn't Norway's royal family and Sweden's and this? And
yeah.
You know, why aren't they in the fishbowl too with them?
And I don't know if I told y'all, I forgot, but like when I went to London, I took quite a few Ubers and on the radio, they'd be like, the queen is in town. The queen is in town. And I was like, what? But the queen passed. And he'd be like, Beyonce's made it to London.
That is everything.
And I couldn't believe it. I was like, what? Is that like allowed?
When they said the queen is in town, you should have been like, yeah, I just arrived.
Right. I should have. My classic hair flip. My gosh. Yeah. I thought that was funny. Anyways, what I've been enjoying, I've watched The Idol. Have y'all been watching The Idol? Yeah, it's done with like Sam Levinson. I think that's his name. And then The Weeknd, the artist.
I did hear about that.
Yes.
And I heard Lily some Rose scandalous Deb. Things about that, so I'm kind of like not sure if I
want. Well, I ate it up. Super problematic, terrible, but I like love the wardrobe for the show. It was supposed to be like female fatale. And it was not giving that whatsoever. I don't know. Anyways, I liked watching it. It was fun to hate watch.
I love the fact that when I do listen to books and I'm in the car and if my husband is with me, say I'm like a third or a quarter into the book, he'll be like, yeah, all right, we can listen to it. And then all of a sudden I'll get the 20 questions. What did she do? Why? Who was that? What?
Wow.
I gotta say, shut up.
But wasn't he listening?
Yeah, he gets into the book. He'll get into the book.
I love that for him.
Yeah.
It's like when like guys walk in, they're like, oh, I'm not going to watch this reality TV show. But they're like hovering in the corner being like, what'd she say?
Oh, wait. I just got sucked into one on the Learning Channel.
Sorry, I don't get into reality TV.
Me neither.
My
husband is into certain shows. I won't say which ones, but it's like, I'll just walk into the room and go, why?
I'm watching 90 Day Fiancé, the one that's like where they meet people in different countries and like they meet them for the first time after getting engaged. And I never thought I would get sucked into reality TV shows, but because they're from different countries and like you're learning about their cultures and stuff, I'm just like, okay. And then so much drama.
I want to watch Love Island.
Ooh,
I heard that. Because there's a US version and then there's the UK one.
Yes, the UK one is all over BBC Radio.
And as a traveler to and from London, I'm officially world class. And I need to know more about my culture, basically.
Oh, okay. I see what you did there.
And we'll return to the show after a quick break. Enjoy the latest movies, music, ebooks, and audiobooks instantly with Hoopla. Cranston Public Library cardholders can borrow up to 5 instant titles each month with no wait times or holds. You can download the free Hoopla digital mobile app on your Android or iOS device or visit www.hoopladigital.com to begin enjoying thousands of titles from major Hollywood studios record companies, and publishers available to borrow for instant streaming or temporary downloading to your smartphone, tablet, and computer.
If you're participating in the 2023 Adult Summer Reading Beanstack Challenge, the secret code for listening to the podcast is subscribe. Again, the secret code is subscribe. Learn more and join the fun at cranstonlibrary.beanstack.com. And remember to drink your Ovaltine.
Anyways, okay, do you want to pop into our first set of questions?
Sure.
Yeah. Number one, Kim, can you explain your role as a cataloger and tell us what you do and the sort of responsibilities you have?
Oh, this should be fun.
Yeah, it's complicated. It's like when people ask me what you do as a librarian, I'm like, well, where do I start?
Yeah, we're multifaceted. Where do I start? Okay, basically, I catalog all the AV for all of the branches of the Cranston Public Library. So DVDs, Blu-rays, books on CD, playaways, music CDs, all kinds of games like PlayStation 5 and the Nintendo Switch. That's a big one right now. Process it, catalog it, make sure it looks all nice with the artwork, make sure for the most part it has the correct call numbers and all of the wonderful codes that keep changing.
And keep them organized and let us know like where to find them in the library.
Every other email. Oh, by the way, we changed so-and-so. But anyway, I digress. And go through like all the AV donations, and then 1.5 shifts, I'm also out on the circ desk. Helping the wonderful patrons of the Cranston Public Library.
That's right. And if you've listened to our last episode where we talked to Dana and Carla, who both work on circulation, Kim basically does that work also when she's on desk with them. Now, can you talk to us more about like what information is involved in cataloging? Like when you say cataloging, what information are you putting into our online system to make sure like we know what it is, how to identify it for like the public and on our side?
Okay, so first of all, obviously the title.
Then
if it's a music CD, the artist. If it's a book on CD, the author. Let's see, what else? There's all kinds of codes. There's an ISBN, which you would see on the back with like a barcode. There's publisher numbers. There's all kinds of series titles. All that kind of information. Like if you basically look at this, I think the simplest one would be a DVD. You see the title, you see the artists in it, you see the information, which would be a summary. You see added authors like a director, a producer, a writer, the co-stars, you know, their names and information. And like I said, all kinds of different kind of codes and stuff that I know how to look for after the last 25 years, but, you know, it's different. You know, I like it.
I mean, like all that stuff kind of acts as like key search terms, because like patrons will come up to us and be like, oh, you know, I'm looking for this movie where this actor was a co-star to someone who I don't remember. I know what their face looks like, but like I need the 1977 version and the 2001 version, and like having all that data in the record of a material.
Yeah, that's a big thing, because you could have one movie that was made in 1977, say, and it's a remake in 1991, and then it's another remake in 2022. So yeah, you can search it by that way too, but you can also search it by author, by artists, by co-stars, by writers, by directors.
Yep.
So yeah.
Yeah. And I think of like Disney movies that have like 5 million different versions of each movie that's like edited, bonus features, Blu-ray,
Diamond Edition.
Yeah. Diamond Edition, Gold Edition.
Platinum Edition.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just horrendous. Basically tells you how old the freaking movie is.
Yeah, exactly.
Like I just want to watch Moana.
Yeah. Exactly. But there's so many different editions.
Go ahead. I'm going to make you sing the theme song.
No, I'm not doing it. Not now.
Don't be shy.
Oh, no.
Okay, Kim. So how did you step into this position here at Cranston Public Libraries?
Oh, my. Okay. So I can tell you exactly. It happened in 1997.
Oh, my God. Okay. That's before I was born?
Yeah. Thanks. Wow. I feel really old now. Okay. So, yeah. It was 1997. My daughter was about a year and a half. And I actually went to the Warwick Public Library. I wanted to get her a library card just for her. Well, because she could not write her name, they would not give it to her. So I ended up coming here, and they did give Amy a card. She could, you know, just sign Amy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it wasn't perfect, but you know, it was good enough, and she was all happy and stuff. And somebody suggested, I don't know how we got on the subject. It was somebody at the CERC desk about, oh, we have part-time positions here, yada, yada, yada. You can just go into the administration offices, grab a application. I did, with Amy in my arm, who started crying and getting antsy and getting cranky. And it was our director, David Maxim, who said, wow, you have your hands full there. And he was just really nice and filled out the application. They needed help in tech services. And it just started from there.
Wow.
And I was part-time for a long time and became full-time in 2019, but always been basically trained as a cataloger from my former boss, Paul Holliday, and a wonderful cataloger at OSL, who is now in Worcester, Patience Terizzi. She lived up to her name. So, yeah.
Love that.
That's basically it.
Oh, my gosh. What an epic tale.
Yep.
Love that. Shall we switch over to you, Becky?
Dun, dun,
Becky's
dun,
playing dun, with dun, a paper dun. Clip. So my role is in acquisitions. And basically what that means is I place all of the orders that selectors send to me from vendors that we order from. So basically they send me all the orders and I place them. And after I place them, I will put them into our system so that patrons can see that we have them on order and that we will be getting them soon. So I do all the computer work for that. And then when the items arrive here at the main central location, I unbox them and I check to make sure everything is in there off of a packing slip. And I make sure that nothing's missing or damaged from shipment. If there is, I have to contact the vendor and get them replaced. And if they're not, they go on a cart where I later receive them in the computer as in cataloging and almost ready for patrons to use. And then I pre-process them. So I let the catalogers know, you know, before I pass them off to them where they're going to go. So maybe the Auburn branch ordered a copy of a book and so did William Hall. I have to slip them accordingly and pre-process them with the location stamps and hand them off to the appropriate cataloger.
And how did you step into this position?
So I worked at another library part-time for 8 years and I graduated college. And one of my good friends who also worked with me there had received a position here full-time and told me about this position that had opened up in tech services as an acquisitions assistant, because at that time there was a full-time acquisitionist who did all the ordering, and I basically would help him out doing some of the sub-ordering and computer work.
And by the way, Becky is my fourth acquisitionist.
Wow.
So, yeah, so I applied for it because my friend thought that it would be a good fit for me. And she was right, because I was already doing like 50 to 75% of what I do now at my part-time job. So I applied and I was lucky enough to get it. Yeah. And then when our former supervisor had passed away, he had designated me the only full, like, sole acquisitionist when we were still using the acquisition module at the time. So I had to learn everything that he did on top of what I was doing. And I did. And it wasn't too bad. I love to have the acquisitions module.
That's harder?
No, actually, it's a lot. It's a little bit of weight off of my shoulders because they took some of the invoicing out.
Oh.
So I used to invoice.
Oh, ew.
Yeah. I mean, I actually liked it. I liked it. I like manual work. So,
for anyone who's listening, let me tell you something. Kimmy and Becky have the hardest jobs, I think, in this building.
Christine, too.
Sorry. But yeah, y'all service all of the libraries. And so we have like more or less a streamlined way of ordering books and doing what we do. But we all mess up. And there's different techniques and thought processes and how we order and how we sort of like catalog things in different areas at the different branches. So Kim and Becky are both so patient, at least patient enough to work with us. They try their best.
I'm sorry, but on any given day, if you come back in tech services, you are going to hear one of us yell, scream, and swear.
It's hard work. Y'all don't get enough credit. That's why I think it's important that you tell people what you're doing, because you're doing really important work. I can't even imagine. I feel like, yeah, I would also be screaming and pulling my hair out.
Well, there's also original cataloging, too, that we do.
So what does that mean?
So in other words, if Becky receives something in, whether it be a book or a piece of AV or a donation, we get a lot of donations.
Mm-hmm.
And make sure if you donate to your public library, it does not smell. but anyway, if it's not in our our system and we can't find a record for it on our different information websites to get it from, we have to put it in manually. We have to put in all that information ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
That's what's called original cataloging.
Okay.
And it's difficult sometimes because especially if we have something that's just, excuse me, from Rhode Island, say it's just published in Rhode Island. It was just made, written, whatever in Rhode Island.
Mm-hmm.
No other library is going to have it.
Yeah.
So we have to make sure that, you know, we get all that, at least the basic information in there,
mm-hmm.
of what people might want to look for or search by.
Mm-hmm.
And Becky doesn't give herself enough credit because I know she knows how to do it.
What?
Yeah.
There's a few times where I have to create something from scratch.
Like a quickie record.
Like a quick record, yeah. It's like if there's nothing to call for through BTCAT or OCLC mm-hmm. for a search, I basically have to find sites because sometimes I don't have the item in hand when I have to put it in for patrons to know that we ordered it. I have to basically guess until it comes in and find information, whether it's on Amazon or a publishing website that it's being published from. And I have to just put in anything I possibly can.
Mm-hmm.
And then when it comes in, I just verify it. Sometimes it's wrong. Sometimes it's right. But mm-hmm.
She makes sure that Christine and I can find our records so we can beef them, as we say, mm-hmm. beef them up, modify them,
mm-hmm.
get them looking very pretty.
Mm-hmm. And consistent.
Yeah.
Because when we order from Ingram, we can format it so that some information when we purchase the titles, some of that information is already transferred with us. So that's easier for the cataloging process, right?
Yeah. So if we download an order or a list from Ingram, it will download very basic information that is more accurate.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes even then, when the item comes in, we'll fill it in. Or if Christine or I notice that it's really bad, we'll do our best to clean it up so that it's better for people to understand what they're getting.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, we do download a lot of the orders from Ingram. AV materials are a little more tricky.
That's a different beast in
it. It's always been tricky.
Mm-hmm. And then to offer sort of like a visual. Okay, we're singing. Y'all want to sing so bad, I swear. And to offer like a visual on what cataloging can kind of look like. It's not just like putting things into an Excel sheet. There's different cataloging formats. Like I remember one in library school reminded me so much of just like coding in HTML. There's MARC records and like a lot like in the reference area or nonfiction, like where specific numbers and decimal points can mean very specific things. That's the same exact thing with coding. I mean, well, yeah, because cataloging basically is coding.
Oh, it looks like coding.
Yeah, yeah, it really
depending
is.
On how we catalog, exactly. There's like three ways we can catalog.
You have to make sure every comma, colon, semicolon,
exactly.
parenthesis
mm-hmm.
Is in the correct spot.
Mm-hmm. And in anyone who like actively codes knows that there's different ways to code mm-hmm. to get to the same place. So that's why it's really hard to be consistent and to really know what you're doing. And again, like that's what makes your job so difficult. And all props to you because, ew. Ew, like I have my bachelor's in IT and I can't stand it.
It's not even just that, but we get so many items every day. We get hundreds of items daily from vendors that we've ordered. So if you think about it, like if you have a list of 80 titles and they're all separate copies, they're not like multiple copies of a title, we have to put in records if they're not in there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm just pretending because it's never like that. But
and you'll wonder why I swear.
I've gotten a list of 15 items and none of them were in there. You got to put in 15 records from scratch.
That's so much work.
It's a lot of work. Yeah.
And one little number. One little number.
Okay,
throw the difference between 10 records.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the way it is.
No. And I remember like in library school for the cataloging class I took, like granted it was just like the one class I took, but to do like one or three records, it would take me all day. Because I just like had to go back over and over and over to be like, okay, I could do this or I could do this, but what's the most efficient way of like changing the numbers or whatever? Or like they would have us do like, here's this item, put it in through like all different five ways that you could catalog it through these different languages. And I was just like, ew. But awesome. Now, can I ask you, because I am genuinely curious, you've both been here for a minute, and I'm wondering how your job has changed or evolved to any capacity, and if there's any patterns you've recognized, maybe in purchasing, or how our softwares have evolved. Is there anything significant, at least, you want to talk about?
There's a lot of significant things that have changed in the last 6 years.
Well,
for me.
16 for you, 25 for me.
Oh, gosh.
I'm trying to remember the first program I started on.
I came in here when it was Millennium, and so I've been through Millennium, Sierra, and now we're in Koha.
Blech.
And I would have to say it's the more challenging of the systems I've had to use while I'm here. There are some things in it that...
She's so diplomatic.
We're being honest, right?
Yeah.
And because we do different things... Yeah, there's a lot of stuff that's more difficult for you because I don't have to do some of that. I don't have to. I mean, I do have to make basic records and catalog, but I don't have to finalize them or call for them or send them to OSL. Mm-hmm. So it's like it's a little bit easier for me, but also it's a little bit more work for me in some areas than you because I have to make like over 20 templates for all the library branches and departments. So I'm not just doing like one library having six templates. I've got to do youth services, teen, audio, visual, DVD, Blu-ray,
and
adult
all the
book,
different materials that go
locations.
With that.
And so I had to create many templates and I had to use them for downloading. So I had to make them in the system and I have to make them for Ingram. So it's a lot of work there. But since that work is done, now it's just a matter of paying attention and picking the right one for what I'm doing. But there are some features in it that are a little bit more helpful than Sierra.
Yeah. I mean, this new software is complicated. It's, again, like with the coding, it's like there's...
It's a lot more steps than there needs to be, but...
Yeah.
And that's why it's challenging, because you have to find a groove, but...
Yeah. There's a lot of ways to get to one place, whereas... And, like, the only other program I've used for the library is Sierra, so... I had complaints about that one, but at least there was like one streamlined way of getting to each thing that you needed to do, whether that was like putting a hold, making a list to
Thank
get the
you.
Holds, like to catalog something, to do like an item on the fly. Like there was one streamlined way, and if you got it wrong, you could like take notes and be
I'd
like,
rather
these are the
steps. I'd
rather
go back to Dynex.
I don't know if I want to go back to Dynex.
I think that's the program I came in on is Dynex. I'm not sure, but... Yeah.
I barely remember.
I just think every step with this new system just takes longer than what it needs to be.
Yeah. Mm.
Truly, it does. Where it would only take, say, 2 clicks, now it takes 6 clicks.
Mm.
And it's frustrating.
Mm-hmm.
I can't speak for Christine, nor do I want to, but for myself, it just takes longer than what it should be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The workflow is now longer.
Yeah. I feel like tech services, so y'all, and then also circulation, they're the ones who use most
of... Forget about it.
Yeah, they use like most of everything, most of the tools that were available on Sierra and of course Koha, because they're dabbling in a little bit of everything. And of course, y'all are doing the cataloging and all that jazz. So,
but I mean, we cover at CERC, so we dabble in CERC too.
Oh, yeah.
And searching and putting holds and, you know, patron cards. So it's like, you know, we do a little bit of everything too, but I don't know. It's... All I can say is I'm glad I don't have to do invoicing acquisitions in this module, because that would be something.
That would be difficult.
Yeah. That would be something. And so another point in that question would be, you know, like I had mentioned before earlier when I was explaining what I did, they took away the acquisitions module in Sierra and Millennium. And I mean, I would have to sit down with the financial manager office manager and do a fiscal year close with them every July for quite a few years. And now I don't have to do any of that because they manage their budget spreadsheet or Google Docs, something like that. I don't ever have to use it because I don't have to manage anybody's budget or tell people how much they have left anymore, whereas I did before. So that's a little bit of a load lifted off of my shoulders. But there's other things that make up for that now. And the volume of materials that we receive now is much more substantial. So
it's so interesting.
It's always busy, busy, busy.
Yeah. I was going to say it's so interesting hearing you talk because Kim was right. You're very diplomatic.
That's why
you're so professional, but you're well spoken.
I'm not saying anything because people know me. I will be nice.
Oh, don't worry. I have my moments, but.
But you're being so thorough, and I can't imagine anyone like sitting down and listening to this and being like, wow, I didn't understand anything.
Right now.
No, but it's
sleeping.
No, this is so informative. Like, I'm learning, and that's why it was so important for me to do this, because I genuinely had questions about your jobs and like the responsibilities y'all do, and I feel like I do understand better. So thank you. Thanks on my behalf, y'all. Why are you laughing?
No, we're not laughing.
I'm being genuine.
No. And I actually would like to say that I think it's a good thing that people outside of tech services know what we do, because I believe half of the people that are here in this system don't know what we do.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, sometimes I'll be out and I say I work at a library. And
oh, it
I,
must be and, Christmas and, every day.
Well, that, yeah, they do say right? that. But before they know what I do, I'll tell them, oh, I work in tech services cataloging. Oh, so you shelf all day and you shelf read?
What?
I mean, I've done that, but no, that's not what I do all day. You sit around and read books all day?
Oh my gosh.
Yep.
I get that a
I get
lot.
That
I'm
going
to start swinging at people when they say that to me.
I get, oh, you work at a library. It must be so nice and peaceful.
Yes, no. I get that too. Oh, that's so cool. You must get bored. It sounds boring. I'm like, oh no.
Mm-mm.
Never a dull moment.
Never. Absolutely not.
All right, I have a question. If you had to shelve a cart, nonfiction or fiction?
Nonfiction all day long.
All the way, nonfiction.
All day long.
Disgusting. I can't manage.
Because a number is a number.
Yeah. When you shelve fiction and you have like five authors with the same last name, then the OCD kicks in and you start to get a headache because you have to make sure like all of their
Patterson,
first names are
you
in
have
order.
To like Patterson, you have to make sure that the title is in
and
alphabetical
that too.
Order.
So you go like author, then title. Then, you know.
Series.
Mm-hmm. Oh, there's some that have
part
two
one,
authors.
Part two, part 25.
Oh my goodness, my brain.
Yeah. Like it's a number and it fits perfectly. And, forget about children.
Nonfiction.
Sorry.
I actually like shelving in children's because if I have to shelve in children's and I have to do fiction, it's not as bad as adults.
I get overwhelmed because there's skinny books and there's so many on the truck. And I'm just like, I'm never going
to. I just like to look at them because then sometimes I have to open up the picture books and see what they're about because I love children's picture books. I think they're so cute and hilarious and teach great life lessons.
Gee, Becky, which ones do you
like? But I'm not trying to say that I don't shelve because I read them all day. I'm just saying.
Actually, it's kind of cool because she gets to see absolutely everything.
Oh, I do.
Before we even get to see it. Like, we're the second party that sees it, me and Christine. But I mean, she gets to see it first. And all of a sudden, she'll go, guys, you got to look at this children's book before you catalog it. It's so funny.
They're so creative. Like, they've become so much more creative. And the illustrations make it too.
And the topics.
Oh, yeah.
Damn.
I get some saucy. Well, not saucy ones.
But you
I
know something?
Books,
some of those are the best books because they're really funny and kids. It makes kids want to read it. And I know, like, you know, depending on what it is. I mean, I've read like five books about underpants or potty training. But the way that the author writes them will make a kid want to.
Well, not only a kid. Well, not only a kid, but I feel as a parent. Like some parents are actually either afraid, scared, or embarrassed to talk to their kids about certain subjects. And sometimes books will help. And they've crossed that boundary now that, okay, this isn't taboo anymore. You know, here's a book to help you talk with your child about this. Mm-hmm. You know, so
I was really happy when Disney came out with Turning Red with the, was it the panda?
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, they talked about like things with, you know, children and that. And so I was like, that's a lot of people want to talk to their kids about topics
I did.
Like that.
Everything.
I mean,
my mother too.
There was no topic not talked about.
Wow.
Lucky Amy.
But it's important. I think it's important. I honestly, you know, it wasn't like something that was just like, when I watched the movie, I was just like, oh, that's really good that they're bringing that up, you know, because kids are going to get upset or freak out or cry or mm-hmm. be embarrassed. And, you know,
always. It doesn't matter.
It's life. It's always. You know,
mm-hmm. There's more ways in children's literature and like just media in general that kids are being seen and recognized for who they are and like what they're going through. And like so much of what I do in my collection development and when I'm thinking like a reader's advisory is how can I address that in as many facets as possible. Mm-hmm. So like obviously accessibility, inclusion, diversity, like we need more books with kids in wheelchairs. We need more books with kids who are black and brown and going to space and like fighting dragons. And like, what can that look like in a graphic novel versus a picture book versus a board book? Where can that story be best told? Or that more, type of thing.
Right. Or more books that give more confidence to little girls.
Exactly. Yeah. And there's so many books right now that are like, you know, here are all the reasons why you're beautiful and like just giving so many self-affirmations to mm-hmm. children. And it's so beautiful, but there's also so much. So it's hard, like on my part, going through those books and be like, okay, but which are the best ones? And like, we want those books that are going to have those self-affirmations and remind kids that like they deserve the world and you mm-hmm. should dream about mm-hmm. everything. You should have all your wishes, but also not just stories.
If I could be president,
so you totally
when
can.
I'm going to be president,
yes,
you know?
Exactly. Yeah. And also just like stories of kids having fun, right? Like, I feel like it might have been Turning Red where like I saw widespread on Instagram specifically. You haven't seen it. Oh my God. So cute.
It was good too.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I saw Luca the other day and it made me cry. I was like, what? No wonder everybody loves this movie. Anyways, back to what I was saying, you guys, let me finish my thought. That it's important to also just get stories about kids being kids. And I feel like that was the whole thing with Disney recently is like they're getting more stories that are less about these big adventures and just like these really small like moments within like a week of like kids just trying to figure out their identity, like just push past certain barriers. And that stuff is important. Mm. Like, okay, my book group is reading Frizzy. And Frizzy is all about, like, hair love. It's a Dominican-American girl, and she's got, like, this big, beautiful, orange, curly hair. And it's just one of those stories where there isn't any big plot points to it. It's just, like, what do I do with my hair?
Okay, my kid needs to read that book, then.
I know, yeah. No, that's right. Amy and I have beautiful, curly hair. I forget. No, seriously, have her read Frizzy. But it's just one of those stories where, like, even my mom, like, when she saw the cover – my mom does not have orange curly hair. She has dark brown curly hair like mine. But, like, she's really dark and she has the same complexion as the character. And the first thing my mom said when she saw the cover was, like, oh, my God, she looks just like me, Elena. She looks just like me. And, like, what? My mom's, like, 48 years old. She got all teary-eyed. She's like, whoa. I could have never imagined that my own story and these, like, small moments of my life where I doubted my hair and, like, how professional my hair made me and, like, the colorism in our society and, like, Dominican culture and all that. Like, I never thought I would have a moment where I could give, like, a nod to solidarity, nonetheless, in a kid's graphic novel. And so that stuff is important not just for the kids but the adults also, mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm. Gosh, how did we get here? I love it.
I don't
it.
Know. We digressed big time.
I love it. No. Do we want to wrap up?
It's up to you. You're the host.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay, well, we've had an awesome discussion, and we're going to wrap up the show with a segment called The Last Chapter, where we talk about a library or bookish-related question. For this week, our question is, what books do you give the most?
What I like to give?
Yeah, I guess, so like to other people.
To other people?
Yeah.
Okay. The classics. And when I say classics, like Red Badge of Courage, you know, To Kill a Mockingbird,
okay.
you know, those classics. Also to anything to do with history.
Oh, that's right.
I absolutely love history. Period. End of discussion.
Well, you're also on a mission to read all of the presidents, right?
Yeah. Like, and let's see. Stuff? Authors need to get going because there's certain presidents that do not have anything written about them.
Oh, that's weird.
Yeah. So I'm like, okay, well, I got to jump from Hoover to Roosevelt or, you know. And But yeah.
I love that. And then why do you do classics? Do you think there's like a timelessness to them, like
yes.
a necessity to read them?
Yeah, I do. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of people, I've never read that. Well, here's a book.
Mm-hmm.
Read it.
Mm-hmm.
You know. And either that or if I know they like a certain person, because I love reading about biographies, autobiographies, stuff like that. If I know a person likes a certain person, I will try to find a book about that person and give it to them.
Oh, I love that.
You know, whether it be a regular, typical biography, memoir, or a graphic novel.
Yes.
I have to say, I like watching the classics on film.
Really?
That's the way I kind of get to know the classics. I've read a few of them, like, as a kid, but I think, like, actually watching them on film helps me.
Although, I well, yeah.
A yes little bit. No. It depends on the classic.
Yes and no, because sometimes I'll read a book, watch the movie, and go,
I know.
That
well,
sucked.
Yeah.
Oh my
gosh.
But then if I haven't read the book and I watch the classic movie, I end up loving the movie.
Well, yeah.
I mean, I loved Pride and Prejudice.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
With Keira Knightley. That was
awesome. It's fantastic.
It's back fantastic. On Netflix.
But, you know, I've also read, you know, Tom Sawyer.
Blech.
How Huckleberry. Ugh, I can't even talk. Huckleberry Finn.
That's my favorite classic. Don't
but I've
hate
read
me.
That. I think I've read that twice. I don't even know. I think I might have watched the movie once.
I didn't even know there
just
was a
to
movie.
Match it up. Or something based off of it.
Mm.
There was something based off.
Like, I mean, this isn't a classic, but I'm sure it will be someday. But, oh, God, I just lost it.
The Crawfish. The
Oh, Where the Crawdads Sing.
Delia Owens.
Crawfish.
That's
on my list to watch.
So I listened to the book. Mm-hmm. I like to listen to books, because especially in the car, trips, stuff like that. But anyway, I listened to that first. And then when the movie came out, I was so excited. I was like, oh, you know, they left out so many damn details. I was
they
like, damn,
do.
That sucked.
They always do. And like, so like for me, what I was going to say that I like to give people to read, like I usually like to give out books to kids. Like when I have to buy for like a friend's son or daughter who's turning like 3 or 5 or 10, I don't care how old they're going to get a picture book that's really, really funny from me. Like,
love that.
Like The Day the Crayons Quit.
Or, iconic.
Like Adventures of Captain Underpants. I will
work.
Never.
Mine was Moo Ba La La La.
Oh, that's yours. Yep.
Wow.
Yep.
I don't know if I have one. And board books are my favorite things to buy.
I noticed.
Okay. I can remember the first book that Amy was like, so she just kept saying it. All over and over and over at home, and I like that. Chicken Soup with Rice by Maurice Sendak.
Oh my god!
She had to say it just like
that. That's so cute.
Mm.
But if I had to give a book to an older kid or a teen or even an adult, because honestly, they were really creepy, I would have to say The Scary Story.
Iconic.
And going to the movies, like watching that for the movies.
It was actually horrific,
so
let's be honest.
It yes and no. So like I've read that book over and over and over.
Yeah.
And there's certain stories that they used in the movie that I was like obsessed with. Like, you know, with the Scarecrow and stuff. I was so underwhelmed with the Scarecrow story. I was disappointed with how they did it, because in the book, you know, it ended really gory and like, no, I would have been running.
Mm-hmm.
But like in the movie, it wasn't like that. And I was just disappointed with that. But then the other ones, like with the spider or the toe or the thumb.
There was this, yeah, the
and
spider.
The hospital scene.
Yeah,
like,
that was, I didn't, ooh, I didn't like that,
that
one.
Was
yeah.
amazingly done from the book. And I was just like, wow, yeah, that just redeemed a lot. But yeah. It was good, though. Overall, it was good.
Yeah. I feel like they tried to do – well, Fear Street came after those ones. But, like, there's something about, like, the sort of, like, teeny bopper horrors that aren't actually horror. I'm like, but if you added that gore and grim, like, we would really eat it up.
Goosebumps.
Really eat – yeah, Goosebumps is horrific. Do y'all know that I collect Goosebumps books? Like, I'm trying to get –
I didn't know that.
The very first one.
I'm trying to get, the, like,
favorites.
All of the first editions. Oh, my gosh. I absolutely
I just feel
love
like writers
them.
Have so much more liberty than a producer making a movie.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
They had some really creepy Goosebumps too.
Oh yeah, no. Like I can't to this day watch the introduction where the dog gets the like snake eyes. No, thank you. No, thank you. It has no right to have those yellow eyes. I don't like it. I don't like it. No, thanks.
Also, you're going to go home and your rabbit has yellow eyes.
No, don't say that, because they have those, like, bunnies have those reflective eyes. So, like, at night, if I put, like, a flash, her eyes are glowing, and I don't like it. Don't even say that.
I do that at night when I walk moose.
Yeah.
Bunny. Squirrel. Possum.
Say cheese.
Say cheese. No, that one's fun. That one's fun. Why not?
That was a good one, too.
Yeah.
The Say Cheese and Die set.
My favorite was The Haunted Mask, because I had that one on VHS, and I would watch it over and over and over again. And I remember Cartoon Network used to do, like, for 2 or 3 years, where they would show every single one. Like, they would do a marathon. And so I, like, burned on a disc every single episode. And it's so funny because, like, I'll go back and watch it with my brother because he loves Goosebumps too. And, like, it'll show the commercials of, like, 2008 or whatever it was. Jesus. So it's so weird. I'm basically Amy's age.
But see, every time I watch, I saw that book, I think of Jim Carrey in The Mask.
Really?
Because he's holding the mask up to his face. And I'm just like, oh, that just kind of ruins the
scariness. Yeah, but like the haunted masks fly and they chase you. I don't like that.
Werewolves.
Oh my god.
Creepier than The Mask.
The Fear Street ones were good too.
Oh, but those are like more real good.
Those are like grim. Like people getting sliced in half on a roller coaster. Yeah. I loved
it. There's a murderer in the neighborhood after you just came home from prom. Where did they go?
Yeah.
Where's Jessica? I don't know.
They were so good, though. They were so good.
They always ended the chapter with the cliffhanger, and you're, like, ready to, like, just go under the covers and just, like, cry because it's so scary.
Okay. Thinking on my part what books I would give away, I pretty much always give away graphic novels. Like Babysitter's Club, Heartstopper, and then either a picture book. My favorite picture book is I Want to Be a Vase, which is
it was so good.
I've done a program about it. Like, it's literally all about like accepting other people for their differences and like just let them be. Everyone's trying to live, laugh, love, so like just let them be. And this plunger wants to be a vase, so like let it be a vase, whatever. So I try and give that book away, even if it's to teenagers. I'll do it. I don't care. It's hysterical.
It's in my Goodreads.
Oh, and it should be. And then, again, like something with my own personal agenda. So whether that's like Invisible, a graphic novel that's completely bilingual, like every word, every line, you know, that one talks about like immigration, or doing a story about, Frizzy, basically, or Amari and the Knight Brothers. something mainstream and then something new that I think kids should be paying attention to. All right, we ready to wrap up?
Yeah.
You're stalling.
Thank you for joining me, and thank you, everyone, for listening. If you'd like to respond to the last chapter topic, send us an email at downtime@cranstonlibrary.org or reach out to us via social media with the hashtag DowntimeCPL. If you're feeling generous, please rate and review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts. It helps people find the show. Thank you again for listening, and this has been another episode of Downtime.
Downtime is a project of the Cranston Public Library and is produced by Elena Rios, Nomi Haig, Robin Nizio, and me, Taylor Cardillo. Audio engineering by Dave Bartos. Our theme music is Day Trips by Ketza, and our ad music is Happy Ukulele by Scott Holmes. Links to the books and movies discussed can be found in the show notes. Remember to rate and review Downtime on Apple Podcasts, connect with the podcast on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram with the hashtag DowntimeCPL, and if there's something you'd like to hear on the show, send an email to downtime@cranstonlibrary.org. The views, thoughts, and opinions expressed are the speaker's own and do not represent those of the Cranston Public Library. The material and information presented here is for general information purposes only. The Cranston Public Library name, in all forms and abbreviation, are the property of its owners, and its use does not imply endorsement or opposition to any specific organization, product, or service. The content of this episode is the property of the Cranston Public Library and may not be reproduced without express written permission. Join us next week for more Downtime.
It's not American Horror Story.
No,
you
know? No. I was going to say, NOS. I don't know. Look it up.